Have you ever thought about that while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb? I did. I actually bought two homes in Albuquerque that I Airbnb'd, and it was just an amazing investment, honestly, because, you know, as you are accruing value in your property, you are also making money on the Airbnbs. It's amazing. So your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
21 Seeds infused tequila is a must-have. It's an award-winning tequila. It's infused with real juice, with real fruit, which means the flavors are built in. It's real. So you need like two or three ingredients to make your perfect cocktail. Hey, you know how I'm always trying to keep my house parties exciting? New cocktails? Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's something that's going to flip the script.
Okay.
All right, 21 Seeds infused tequila.
Yeah. Tell me more about this, right? Oliver Hudson.
Yeah, 21 Seeds is an award-winning tequila that's infused with juice from real fruits. You only need two to three ingredients to make the perfect cocktail.
Wait a minute. I think I know what brand you're talking about. You know why?
Yeah.
Because 21 Seeds is founded by two sisters and their friend. It's female founded.
That's right.
See?
Sounds
See
like
how I know? Something I can get behind.
I know. Well, there's a good story behind that for sure. Listen, if you love tequila, you have to try 21 Seeds infused tequila. Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And my name is Oliver Hudson.
We wanted to do something that highlighted our relationship.
And what it's like to be siblings.
We are a sibling revelry.
No, no.
Sibling revelry.
Don't do that with your mouth.
Sibling revelry.
That's good. Oliver, this was so much fun. We're just talking about it right now, about how great it was to connect with the Crudups and how much we love them, you know.
The Crudups.
The Crudups.
Yeah, well, I met Billy obviously through you. Mm-hmm. And we hit it off tremendously a little bit later after Almost Famous, and we became golf buddies. And then we drifted apart, and it's been a long time. And it was so fun to see him again and his energy. And he's so fucking funny.
He's so funny. I think it's something people don't really know about Billy because he's such a serious actor and he is seen that way and portrayed that way. And, you know, he takes it very seriously. But for on a personal level, he is one of the funniest. And you know what? That's one question that we didn't ask them, which I wanted to ask, which is where do you think you get your sense of humor from? Because they're all funny. And their sense of humor is all the same, very similar, really dry and witty. And you realize that it has to come from your parents. Whatever that family kind of way is taken from your, because we're all crazy, goofy.
We exactly. Kind
of, you know, our sense of humor is a little nutty and out, out
we're
there.
We're all very similar in our sense of humor. I mean, we get each other and you can see that within the three of them too, how tight they are. And I love what they said. This is not verbatim, but it was that they don't need to be with each other to sort of love each other all the time. And that's when you know it's solid, where it's like, we don't have to be in each other's spaces or talk on the phone all the time. Like, you just feel their closeness.
Yeah, and this was great. We reminisced a lot. We even talked about a bit about Almost Famous, which was really fun for me. And Billy is one of those people that you work with certain people and you lose touch. Billy, I've always kept in touch with. Like, we've always had, for now 20 years, a connection that maintains. So it was really, really great to have them all on. And
it was awesome.
And I love you.
I love you too.
Enjoy this episode with Tommy, Brooks, and Billy Crudup.
Billy's never included the family in media, so this is a first.
Where are you guys?
Well, we're in New York.
I'm in West Hollywood. Okay. And then the boy, your brothers are both in New York.
We got New York and Brooklyn.
I'm on the Upper West Side.
Wow.
They were kind of quiet there, like they were in undisclosed locations.
Yeah, I was like, what's going on?
I wouldn't ask further. I wouldn't ask follow-up questions.
There's a few things I can't talk about today.
I'm going to skip.
clearly, Billy, you and I go way back. I believe I was 19 when we first met, which is totally insane. That's How old crazy. Were you during Almost Famous?
30.
Oh.
I think I
just... Hold me closer, tiny
dancer. Oh, thank God we got an interlude there.
Holy something on the highway.
Thanks, Ollie.
You sound good.
Thanks.
You sound real good.
Tommy, I've also known for a million years because you work at Rachel Ray as the talent producer, the talent producer.
Yes, I am the co-executive producer of the Rachel Ray Show.
Oh, you're co-executive producer.
We're going up there.
Woo! How many titles?
I travel everywhere with the Emmy.
Whoa.
Yep. Hey, Billy, did you show your Emmy? Do you?
You know, they haven't sent it. I did get a mini bottle of champagne.
It takes like 6 months, Bill.
Okay.
But Brooks, we were just sitting here saying, and I was literally like, I feel like we met a million years ago, but we haven't really had the same kind of history. So this is going to be exciting. I'm going to get to know Brother Brooks.
I'm waiting for my Emmy. It's been held
when
up
did you get it a few years. It's been a few years since they said.
Yeah, I don't know. I keep calling.
No, it's because of the postal shutdown.
Oh,
no,
didn't they let you know on email? And you just had to send some money to a Nigerian friend.
I keep calling and dial tone. Yeah. I'll find it. I'll track it.
I have the wrong number. We'll see if we can get you the number. Tommy's got it.
Yes.
I also want to say that Billy and I do not condone this mustache. This is not a family tradition.
Well, once I saw
I don't know. Billy's had a mustache. Billy does go mustache a lot. Yeah,
that took him 6 months to grow that mustache for going with famous.
With the whole... Brooks
has got the Shakespeare chin boogie going on.
With the homeschooling and Brooklyn, I've lost it. So if I fade off into the railing, you know.
Oh, I know where you're coming from, man. But I gotta say, Brooks kind of does have a Shakespeare vibe overall. He kind of looks a little like Shakespeare,
and he's the writer.
So yeah.
By the way, that's a great Halloween costume for you. Have you?
As the writer who does CIA surveillance,
as a musketeer,
No, I'll do Shakespeare. I'll put Shakespeare. One of my sons, Griffin, said, "I look like George Washington." And I said, "Get out of the room. I don't look like George Washington." I don't know what you're talking about.
Wait, tell them your kids' ages so they know how
seven.
Many.
Yeah, that was Griffin, who's seven. He goes, you look just like George Washington. I was like, you're gonna look like a smashed bagel if you don't get out of the room. Do not call me George Washington. And I pulled up a side by side. He goes, no, you look like him. I was like, get out of here.
2020 has been a hard year. I'm gonna recover strong.
It's been rough.
When the quarantine started, we used to have a weekly poker game up at Tommy's apartment. And so it quickly moved to Zoom. And we realized, wait, it's super easy now since everybody is quarantining to play. And it turned into a twice a week Zoom where, and I think we became Tommy's intimate partners.
It's been a mainstay through the whole thing. And it's actually been terrific.
Hey, hit me up.
It's not really poker, Ollie. It's more of a group therapy meeting.
Okay.
It's a lot of yelling, and there's an app that occasionally says somebody won a hand, at which point the yelling resumes.
Well, I want to be a part of that.
Wait, you guys, is it just the three of you? Are there any other siblings?
Not that we're aware of.
We have two stepsisters. They're not married anymore, but we're still they're our sisters.
Okay, so let's rewind. Where did you guys grow up?
Who wants to tackle this?
Tommy, you start with where you were born.
I was born in Chapel Hill while my father was a senior at UNC. And then 6 months later, we moved to...
That's North Carolina.
North Carolina, sorry, UNC. We then moved to New York where my father sold yarn. And then Billy and Brooks came along in Manhasset 5 years and I'm sorry, a year and a half and 4 years later.
Yeah, I don't like our introduction immediately.
You guys came along.
And we just like came along and like then we were like hanging out with you.
There's some new guys in the house I got to deal with.
What were you doing for 5 years?
By the way, mom had nothing to do with it. She's not even a part of that origin
story. I don't remember that part.
I came along and when we were at Long Island. And so.
So your dad and your mom, did they meet in college?
Yes.
Yes.
And they were young.
Yeah, they were at different colleges. And I think my mom had come to Chapel Hill for a party or something. And they met at that party and hit it off. And
but they were like 20 then. If he was.
Yeah, I think they were 21 or 22 when they got married. Is that right, TC?
I think mom was a little younger.
Okay. I feel like she was 24 when I was born. Yeah, that would be right because I'm 52 now.
We shouldn't do math on this podcast.
Yeah, no, well, hold on. Let me carry the two. Just you guys, hold on a second.
We'll get back.
By the time I was seven, our parents were separated and we moved to Coral Gables, Florida. And then when I was 10, they were remarried to each other.
Okay, right. I remember that.
By our step-grandfather, who was an Episcopal bishop in South Florida.
Right.
Wow.
And we moved to Dallas. Then they were divorced a year and a half later.
No. Because he stopped selling yarn at that point. And he was selling other stuff.
Coffee. He was doing other things.
Selling coffee.
Yeah, coffee and other things that fell off the truck.
Yes. and then at 15, my mother met an attorney from Fort Lauderdale. They were married. We moved to Fort Lauderdale. They were divorced 5 years later. We moved my mother back to Dallas. And then I was in Dallas with my mother running a yogurt shop. And Brooks was at UT.
I can't believe it's yogurt.
I can't believe it's not yogurt.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it's not yogurt.
I was managing high school girls who didn't want to come to work, so I was there all the time. Having mothers scream at me, they've lost no weight on the sugar-free yogurt. And Billy called
me. They didn't.
No.
There was a whole Seinfeld episode about it. It was a ruse.
That's all true. Billy graduated from Carolina, called me and said, if I get into Tisch, I'm moving to New York, or I'm going to LA, would you like to go to either one? And this is why I'm filling out a quart of yogurt. And I said, yes, either one is fine. Thank you.
it's not exactly the way that I remember.
That's a good synopsis.
I remember getting into acting school and calling you to tell you about it, and you said, "Can I please come with you?"
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, that's how I remember it.
And by the way, on Billy's IMDb page, it says that I was already in New York, and Billy came to join me.
Well, we patently know that's not true because we packed a U-Haul together and drove from Dallas in my Isuzu Trooper all the way up and found our apartment on Upper East Side. Right, it wasn't really upper, 65th and York. It's kind of
New York. And then a year and a half into our new digs in New York, my mother called me at work and said, I need to talk to you about something. I said, oh, what's that? I just want to get your opinion. I'm thinking about moving to the city.
Oh, man.
And after I picked up the phone, I go, oh, my God, I think that's great. Thinking I have 6 months. She's like, I'm so relieved. I sold the house yesterday. I'll be there tomorrow. And so Billy and I, we both told Georgianne that she could not live within 30 blocks of us. So her apartment was at 96 and York.
No, she was at 88th.
Yeah, I think it was a 20 block radius. Your mandate.
That's
and,
not true.
I think also, Tommy, I might add, mom will probably be listening to this, so you might want to temper your tone a little
bit. It was 96th Street.
No, it was 88th.
It was 88th, Tom.
It was 88th. I mean, and then Brooks graduated.
It's two against one on this one, Tommy. I think you might need to just like let that go.
By the way, you want to talk about problems with math.
I'm going to stick to my gun.
Anything. I mean, he might not know how many Emmys he just held up.
That was one.
All right. So you guys, you're like basically like an army brat, but your dad's selling stuff. I can't wink.
We're a divorce.
I don't know how to do that.
We're divorced brats.
Divorced brats. Yeah, okay. Okay.
So how fucked up are you guys?
I mean,
like on a scale of 1 to 10, who's the most fucked up and who's the least?
Oh boy.
I'm going to put myself at an easy 9.
Yeah.
You know,
does it go to 11?
With homeschooling, Brooks has gone one more.
Yeah. The knobs fell off.
So wait, let's talk dad, mom, young, you know, fall in love, have Tommy. Tommy, what's your age difference?
A year and a half.
Year and a half and 5 with Brooks.
Oh, so Billy, you're the middle child.
I'm the middle
child.
That
makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. I think it does actually.
Why are you a middle child? Or
yeah.
You are. No.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Home and closer, time to dance.
Okay. Are you the youngest, Oliver?
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest.
Yeah. He's the one that, you know, is like mom,
best.
Like.
What? The best?
Yeah, the best.
He just waited for it. He's the one that's the best.
Yeah.
I like your attitude.
He's Oliver, definitely a firstborn. He's like stereotypical firstborn stuff, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like mom didn't know what to do because he wouldn't eat, you know. So she poked a hole in the bottle so big that it just like poured down his throat. Right?
I was too lazy.
It's like that just,
you still drinking shotgun beers?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. Okay, so what were your parents like?
They were fun. They were kind of they had tremendous affection for one another. It was just, you know, I think more the stability that dad could manage, which led to challenges and I think her being able to depend on him. But they were super fun and, you know, really sweet. At a certain point, obviously, mom went to 11 too, like Brooks, because she was stuck with the three of us. To the point of this podcast, that is definitely where the battle royale began, as far as I can ascertain.
With the boys.
With the three of us, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, to Billy's point, they were both so much fun that this street we lived on, part of Washington, was called Park Avenue. And we're still friends with some of the neighbors on that street. And
really?
There would be block parties. Yeah. The Joneses still live in their same house.
Yeah.
And we still like.
And the Orms.
Yeah, the Orms. And so these were lifelong friends that we made way back in the 70s in New York.
Wow.
And all remained.
What was their vibe? Were they artsy?
Very social.
Social.
Very social. There was one of the people on the street had his guitar and he'd come out. We'd all be outside. He'd play John Denver. And it was a wonderful time.
I don't remember.
Okay, then they get divorced when you're 7, Tommy, right?
Yeah, for the first time.
And then does dad split and it's just mom and the three of you? Is he mm-hmm. around?
We moved down to Miami because that's where my mom was from. And both of our parents were only children. And my dad's parents were in North Carolina and my mom's mom was in Miami. Her dad had died before I was born.
Oh, okay. But was she alone with you guys now?
Yes, correct.
Right.
It was the four of us in Miami.
Okay, so you guys just like run amok. And there was, I mean, correct. Bless your mom's heart.
Oh, yeah. A lot going on.
Tommy, that must have actually been hardest on you.
Well, I was told that I was then in charge at 7. So I still remember locking the front door in Coral Gables and I'd look over these guys and my mom. So, but I didn't find it difficult. I found it kind of natural.
Yeah. I mean, and now that's what you do in life. You just take
exactly.
care of people.
You can see, he's always been like dutiful, you know, like he was captain of the safety patrol in fifth grade. And I was in fourth grade and this motherfucker gave me a citation. Okay. That's what he was like.
Well, wait. So Brooks, you were a baby when this all happened.
Yeah, I mean, in Coral Gables, but I still remember basically. And Tom, I don't think you took dutiful roles until Dallas because all I remember is all of us running up and down the street in Miami.
That's true. With the pains.
Right. So like my mom let us out and then we would come home like at dusk.
Correct.
There was much of that. But I remember Brooks. I mean, you were super into Spider-Man back then. So you were up early to watch.
Batman.
Batman.
That was yeah, on. Yeah. But I was young, to your point. Yes.
You were young. And I can remember it must have been third grade or something like that. Second or third grade. My mom had a stepbrother, John. And Uncle John rode motorcycles and stuff. And he was like the cool dude. And he blew into town one time to stay with us. And that day, Tommy and I had been out in the driveway fighting. And I said something like, fuck you. And Tommy like was mortified. I mean, he thought he had done a very poor job of raising me. I couldn't at that point. But at dinner that night, he raised the point. He said, okay, you know what? This is what Billy did today. And that's when I learned how to act.
You can't just stop there. What happened?
I was more successful. Story. My mom believed me because I could manufacture the tears that I did not say fuck.
He was pretty amazing.
And Tommy stewed in his jeans, and Uncle John thought it was hilarious.
What did you say? I said fudge.
I said I would never have hanged the stop
And it was that you were actually trying to manipulate your mother. Like it wasn't even just coming from a place of fear. It was you were literally choosing.
Well, it was also coming from
a liar.
It was more punitively trying to get back at Tommy. It was about wanting to exactly.
Yeah.
And he and I maintained that level of volatility
until we moved to New York.
Yeah. We became roommates.
It sounds like you had that volatility at your poker game the other night.
No, that's just regular shit talking.
It is a feature now, but there's no more like hitting each other with sticks so much, you know.
So where does Dad come in now? Is he back and forth? Do you ever have consistent times with Dad?
For 3 years, no.
Well, Brooks, what's your memory of him coming back? Because you were the youngest.
When we moved to Dallas from Coral Gables.
No, she's talking about Miami, Brooks.
Yeah, when we were in Miami, when Dad came back, when they decided to get married again.
I was the pallbearer. Right. I mean, not pallbearer.
He was asking how many times.
Freudian slip. I was the ring bearer.
The pallbearer.
That marriage died too.
Brooks. She's yes. asking how many times Dad came down to Miami in the 3 years before they got remarried.
Are you producing this segment?
I'm just listening to the question. Wow. And then Billy, here to you.
I honestly don't remember him coming down once.
Because it wasn't what he did was he made his way south. He kept coming south and south, and he like picked up a job in Lauderdale or something like that. And then eventually made it back down. He wooed her again and they got remarried. And I was 10 at the time, and I asked them both, I go, are you both serious about this? Oh, knowing geez. That they were not. They really wanted to get remarried for us so we could all be back together.
Right.
Wow.
And they both said yes. And then, of course, a year and a half later, they weren't. That wasn't truthful.
Mm. So wait, what did your dad do? Was he this shady? Like
he was a business man.
He is an odd guy because he was acting. He went to acting classes in the city when we were in Port Washington, and evidently he may or may not have bartended with Brian Dennehy, and he may or may not have been up for the streets of San Francisco against Michael Douglas. That may or may not have happened.
Right.
So, per Billy and Big Fish, some things may or may not have happened.
Yeah.
He did take my mom to a mafia wedding.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was, yeah, that's right. For some reason, I thought it was a funeral.
I thought it was a funeral too, but he was an amazing storyteller. He was a great
wedding.
Was he very handsome?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
but
clearly.
He could talk your ear off at any moment. During the Without Limits premiere in Toronto, he had Tom Cruise cornered, and he couldn't get away.
It went like this. That dad was not terribly interested in my pursuit of acting until I started to make money. And when Without Limits came out, he was aware that there was going to be a premiere somewhere. And he was living in Austin at the time, I believe. Was it Austin or San Antonio?
Yeah, no, it was Austin. And Brooks had left Austin to come to New York sometime after that.
And so he said, I understand you're going to be having a premiere for the Without Limits. Now, where is that going to be, in New York or Los Angeles? And I'm thinking, I do not want him showing up at the premiere and cornering Tom Cruise, precisely to Tommy's point. So I was like, well, that actually it's premiering in Toronto at a film festival they have there. And we're just going to, you know, go up there and it's going to be like super easy breezy and it's not a big deal or whatever. And he literally goes, huh? Well, I might have some business in Toronto. And so the motherfucker, he shows up in Toronto.
No.
And he was super proud because also he was like an athlete when he was growing up, and there was a story about an athlete. So he could identify more with me as an actor playing an athlete. And then, so he was very proud of me, and he was a really warm guy, like really, I found him like loving, funny,
great dresser.
Yeah. Like he was a charming guy.
Okay. But now mom, what did mom do?
Various things. She worked for an advertising agency, when we were in Dallas.
She was a political consultant.
That did political consulting. And she was the president of the PTA for a year. She was involved in the community, but mostly trying to wrangle us, I think, was the major job.
Were these divorces big moments in your life? I mean, or was it like privately maybe, or as a group, was there sadness and pain in all this, or was it just sort of like a, hey, this is life?
I was never that sad. I like going to a different town. We get to meet new people.
That's
very true on my part. Thank you, Brooks. I've told people that. And we also were very close with both our mom and dad. So when they got divorced in Dallas the second time, we would spend every other weekend at dad's and then with mom. So we were all in the same universe all the time in my world.
Right.
I didn't have that response to it. I remember when they told us the second time, that they were getting divorced, that I thought it was because Tommy and I were fighting so much. And so I was sad and felt responsible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, bro. I didn't know that, Bill.
Yeah. Well, I was crying at the table saying we can do better. You remember that part, or you'd already turned the page?
I do remember that, but I remember Granddaddy flew in and it was nighttime and I went downstairs and I saw the papers and I looked at my mom and I was just like, really?
I mean, I kind of remember this. Yeah.
I don't remember that.
And then they told us the next morning or whenever they told us, because Granddaddy was there.
But to Tommy's point, like, you know, it was the 70s and there were other families that were going through divorces. My best friend, his parents were going through a divorce. We were all trying to kind of manage it together as a community. All of the parents maintained amicable relationships. They tried to figure out the co-parenting, and, we certainly looked forward to the dad weekends because, you know, we would cook out or go get pizza or, you know, he did everything that you would anticipate a divorced father doing, living in a singles apartment complex. You know, like he would wake up on the Saturday morning and go get us the best donuts in Dallas. And you know, why wouldn't that be a great start to the weekend? So, yeah, there were a lot of... A lot of fun times, but it was super hard on mom because she had the lion's share, not just of the time, but of the work that goes into managing education, healthcare, all the decisions. And I'm sure that they talked about it some, but again, dad was pretty unreliable when it came to, you know, making appointments and fulfilling them as far as I can remember.
And Brooks, like, I would think that you wouldn't remember life with your parents kind of together. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, except for when they got remarried, but
it seems to me like he was always not there. But I have like memories, like, this is a quasi funny memory, but he took me out of school to sell these, I guess I was in first grade, maybe, Brockenbrellers at some trade mart in Dallas.
Open market?
Yeah. So at a sandwich board and wearing them and like walking back and forth and selling them. And then, and he bribed me by getting a picture with Spider-Man because I loved Spider-Man, but like he pulled me out of school to sell like umbrellas. So, but I loved it. I loved him for it. But also he did drop me off and then leave. So to your point, it's like, I knew back then. And then I remember that conversation of like, you pulled him out of school. Like what? You know, and then you're at the Trade Mart, and I remember I had like a hard salami that I were cutting up, and I was like, oh, salami is really good. And they're like fighting about selling, you know, Brockenbrellers that you wear on your head. I have a picture of me wearing this.
Wait, but yeah. I love that this is like, I mean, this is like a memory.
It's a memory. It's a single one, but it really does to me speak to the collective experiences that we all had. I mean, that to me, it was charmed, but it takes kind of being an adult to realize how bonkers it was.
Right.
Totally. You know, like, you're like, God.
Like, Brooks, is that a choice that you would make with Griffin at some point?
No, but this is a completely different universe. Also, to the point of like 70s and 80s, we were watching E.T. and I was showing Griffin for the first time. And, you know, D. Wall, she's the whole story is about basically divorce. Right. And like the dads in Mexico and this is happening. I'm like, oh, this is like a little heavy. I mean, this, you know, but that was the zeitgeist back then, to where it was just like, oh, it's just what was happening. And
But I don't know if you guys had the same memory, that because we all have these examples. But I also at some point just found it colorful. And, you know, he would say something like, you know, this is the big one, Tom. And then for a birthday, we'd get something out of the newspaper that showed a new suit. And he goes, you're getting this new suit eventually. And
someday.
I'm like, no, I'm not. But thanks for the thought. I love the thought. Thank you, Dad. And so we all have those examples through the years.
Did you ever get the suit?
No. The suit was never coming. For graduation from high school, I got a cutout from a magazine of a cruise.
Was it laminated?
But I think that our expectation was that we always wanted him to be successful for himself.
We did, yes.
And if we got anything out of it, great. But we really just wanted him to win and do well. And the stuff that came with it, I loved him so much. And
I mean, at least you got a cutout.
Yes,
I
mean,
absolutely. And that's the thing. He had the desire, you know, he had his. He thought it was just the ability to follow through was so stifled. And I think it had to do so much with his relationship with his father and the kind of pressure that my grandfather put on him to be successful, that the only way he was ever going to reach it was by hitting something big. He wanted his pet rock.
It kind of sounds like Oliver a little bit.
Yeah, as I was just about to say. It's me.
It's like Oliver's just looking for hitting that big, you know, thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This might be it, Ollie.
I'm a gambler. I put it on black. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
You and my dad would have gotten along so well.
Is there a part of your dad in each of you? Did you see one who's more dad than not? You know?
I was in a parking lot at 7-Eleven with my dad, and he turned to me, and this was my sex ed talk. He goes, son, the good Lord made nothing better than a woman. And I'm like, okay. Dad, I'm going to go get a Slurpee now. Thank you. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, when you reflect on it, Tom, maybe not all of his advice was fun.
I've been reading a book about the bike, but there was a lot there.
That should be like quoted on your wall. That is the greatest.
I learned so much at 7-Eleven that day.
Well, I do think that there are parts of him in all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we're all in entertainment in some aspect, and even my dad, he loved it. I mean, he loved film, he loved television, and my mom, he loved books. My mom loved art and photography and film. And so if it weren't for both of them, I don't think that we would have, all three of us, ended up in some.
I mean, Kate, years ago, Billy and Brooks, and I forget what age, but I've been the size that I am since I was like 14. I grew very fast and then stunted. And Billy and Brooks grew when they were senior, junior year. And I would just lay on top of them and just, you know, be like, you guys suck, I'm in charge. And then they would start singing their Broadway songs. And Billy would go, Brooks, imagine that, me on Broadway. And he would go on for 2 hours.
Just to annoy Tommy. It was the only way to get really under his skin.
And it would drive me insane. And in the background, there'd be a Barbra Streisand album playing. And so there was always music in the house. There was always, my mom, to her credit, would bring us back to New York to look at theater once a year or twice a year.
Yeah, that was
3 years. Definitely. And so we were always inundated with art, and it was so amazing and so exciting, and having music on all the time in the house, just, it was so warm. And I think that's why we all love it so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel the same. I feel like so much of what I actually do, or that makes up some of the principles or the career that I've followed, has been from mom, and just the, like, the regularity of how she raised us and trying to be socially aware, being interested in art, being interested in your community. And dad, he brought in the Cajun spice and, you know, yes, you should do it, but you should do it with style, you know, or you should definitely help your community, but make sure you're German on the way out, you know, like there, I mean, he had, or, you know, go to church, but see if you can work an angle and maybe get something out of the tithe. You know, like, he was always looking for
a bit of a hustler.
Yeah.
There's no question to me that, yeah, like, that's what he was. And mom's stability was the thing that I thought, that I always reflect upon in terms of, like, principles of why I think about performing as something important, you know, like, why I think it's a feature of our communal storytelling is a great way for us to all bond, learn things about ourselves and others. And I feel like that comes totally from her.
One of my favorite pictures of Billy and mom are at the Tonys, and mom is looking up at Billy, and you can just tell how proud she is and how thrilled she was to be there with him.
Yeah, I was a little too proud.
Well, I mean,
it's a bit over the top.
He was very excited, but I'm just saying it. That's, you know, she's great at that.
He's proud.
They were also both very caring people. They're both very caring people about society and other people, and they taught us that as well.
I am Billy, and I have, for those who don't know, we have sons that were born exactly on the same day. And January 7, 2004, they're going to be 17. And it's interesting to talk about how you were raised, because the one thing I do know about you, Billy, and I'm going to assume that, Brooks, you're similar, is that you are a stellar parent. Like, you know, of all of your life's journeys and the things that you've done, that is clearly, as someone who knows you, your priority always.
I feel if you can do good enough as a parent, you're doing a stellar job. And I certainly try to do good enough. But to that point, it is on my mind all the time, obviously. Yeah. And some of that must be because of how we were raised.
Yes.
You know, dad's sort of coming in and out and instability made me want to react to that, you know, and try to be as stable as possible for my son. And
yeah,
son,
I was going to draw the parallel with Oliver, who,
well,
you know,
I can relate to that. Yeah,
yeah.
Entirely. I mean, almost, you could go one way or the other,
sometimes,
right?
To the point where you're like, relax. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Go, it's okay. You know,
yeah,
you don't have to be super dad all the time. You know,
yeah, I've gotten better, but it's you get hyper on it. I mean, I went the other way to the extreme of I need to be there all the time. You know, I'm going to break this cycle, you know, because my dad's dad bailed on him, dad bailed on us. And then I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do that. But there was a moment, especially when Wilder, my oldest, was in first grade and I was working in Nashville, where I was just, I felt like I was not there, you know, well, I actually wasn't, but I felt like I was damaging him in some way, and it fucked me up. And it just became this vicious cycle. And I had to sort of break out of it because I was just so nervous that I was going to, you know, make him.
Brooks is in the midst of it right now. We, you know, having kids that are a little bit older, you can start to reflect on it. But I certainly feel like our generation, rightfully, is being called to ask to do something, particularly fathers in parenting, that wasn't modeled for us. Like, the majority of us didn't have fathers that we have an expectation to be, which leads to some confusion and distress. And to your point, Ollie, like, you're obviously going to be projecting and passing that on to your kid, even if it's practical or philosophical one way or the other. And so if you're not reflecting on what your role as a father is in 2020, you might be missing some of the, like, crucial underlying contributing factors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it did swing. I mean, to both of your points, almost way too much farther to the polar opposite to where it needs to come back, you know, to where, but obviously that's a good thing. It's like, you know, that we're there, but also realizing that we can't be there. You can't be helicopter parents.
Right.
I don't want to suffer. You know, I see it around the community as well. I think it comes from a good place, but also it gets really intense to where it's like, you know, we always talk about
it's right
it's
or wrong.
It's not a cliche. Like, we are riding our dirt bikes around in alleys, you know, in Dallas, to where no one was there, you know, got, you know, thank God we're okay. But, you know, we were latchkey kids for at least 5 years. That does not happen anymore.
But don't you think it's like what you're saying, we're missing some of that, you know?
I think it needs to come back a little bit.
We lose a little independence, you know, the kids lose a little independence. They lose that sort of on your own aspect, that feeling of I have to figure this shit out. I got into a situation, no one's here to help me, and now I have to get out of it. You know, that's why we went to Colorado. Katie and I went to Colorado, and I think it changed our experience entirely.
Interesting article about what you're saying in The Atlantic about there's like these sort of experimental parks where they let kids explore freely, but they put objects that are actually kind of, you know, risk-taking objects and giving them opportunities to socially interact. And what they found was that kids created the society. It was almost like a mini society of who becomes the outcast and why. But it's a really interesting article. And it was talking about how we what?
She asked me if I was in Lord of the Flies. And,
the one from the 50s?
The short answer is yes. And I'll leave you to figure out who I played, because I'm a transformational actor, Ali. You know that.
But Kate, what you're saying about that park, which is so cool, is that the three of us, we never had bad friends around us because we would weed them out. If it was one of Billy's friends or one of Brooks's friends, we would just say, you know what, that kid's not cool.
He's got to go.
We would try to insulate ourselves with good people, and you figure that out pretty young.
And it does. It builds up your, and I mean, to the point that you're saying, Ollie, it is one of the primary objections that I feel like is happening amongst parents now, is that over-parenting somehow is as selfish as the under-parenting seemed selfish to us from a different generation. Mm-hmm. When it is a response that's meant to nurture the children and hopefully breed strong human beings that are self-sustaining and have their own sense of agency. And who the fuck knows? I mean, the question is we're only going to know if our experiment at resisting our parents worked once our kids are in their 30s.
That's so funny. True. I say that all the time, man.
All right. So you guys now.
Wait, Tommy, are you watching TV?
No.
Because we're in the middle of a professional podcast here. And your eye line is above the computer.
I'm looking at a painting that I'm working on right now.
It's Saturday, and I'm imagining that there's a game on that you're taking.
I can see the reflection.
During our parenting conversation,
I'm
testing pastels.
What game are you watching?
Hold on, let me cut it off. It's just golf.
I told you.
Wait, you are right.
Narc. Billy, you're a narc.
That's awesome.
Best. Coors Light.
Everything is go, 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 go. Okay? Nothing but nonstop hustle. All the time. There's social issues, pressing meetings, expectations to be on. Sometimes you just need a moment and just turn it all off and hit the reset. And that's when I reach for the Coors Light because it's made to chill. It matches my personality because I am made to chill. This is the beer of all beers. This is a beer that has defined my life. As you know, my sister, Kate, we have been drinking this beer. I've been drinking this beer since I was 21 years old. It is tapped in the Rockies. It is Golden, Colorado.
Coors Light is like the official Colorado beer.
And there's new packaging. It's already hitting the shelves. It's incredible. It's got this new, it's a new design, clear skies. It's got these clear skies that just invite you to sit back, unwind, and drink it all in. You almost want to look at the can and pretend that you were there.
I like the sound of that.
The iconic Coors Light Mountains, they turn blue when your beer is cold. That's one of the great things about the Coors Light. You know that you're drinking an ice cold Coors Light.
Cold, crisp, freezing cold. That's my kind of beer.
So the Coors Light is the one that we choose when we need to unwind, right, Katie? So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that is made to chill. You got to get Coors Light right now. It's got a new look. It's delivered straight to your door.
Get.coorslight.com.
Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. So I just got another shipment of my ButcherBox because I have kept up with this subscription because I love it this much. Incredible beef, incredible fish, incredible scallops, incredible lobster tail. I got lobster tails the other day that were really amazing. So when you sign up right now, you get their steak sampler with 6 grass-fed, grass-finished steaks. Really incredible product, really yummy. And you're stocked. You're stocked up for whatever you feel like that night.
And they give you options like 100% grass-fed and finished beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage pork, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, and, you know, sugar and nitrate-free bacon.
I had salmon. Maybe last week I did the salmon. I cooked up the salmon. You know, you would think, oh, it's frozen. How long has this been frozen for? It was sockeye salmon. Unbelievable. Truly.
You get high-quality meat, and it's about $6 a meal. Packed fresh, shipped frozen, vacuum sealed, so it stays that way.
For a limited time, new members get 6 free grass-fed, grass-finished steaks when they go to butcherbox.com/sibling. That's 2 New York strips and 4 top sirloins added to your first box for free. Act quickly. This offer is only good through Cyber Monday. That's 6 grass-fed, 6 grass-fed, grass-finished steaks for free in your first box. Just go to butcherbox.com/sibling. That's butcherbox.com/sibling.
Okay, so Billy goes to Tish. Tommy, you come along. Brooks, so now what about you? So it's just you and Mom?
No, it's he and Dad in Austin.
Oh. So
I was in Austin with my dad from 92 to 98 and worked for 2.5 years at a hotel and then went to the University of Texas in Austin.
Were you lonely? Was that your brothers?
Well, I would go up and visit.
Yeah, for a long time.
Which they loved. My maybe for like a month.
Yeah, so, you come for the entire Christmas break,
right.
And we had
what
a
was
really
wrong with
cool
that?
Apartment, and so, at the time, both Brooks and I were smoking, Tommy got all the secondhand smoke there.
So this was a one-bedroom apartment, and then Brooks would sleep on the couch in my room. I slept on the one on the single bed, and Billy had a double in the other room.
Ugh.
And
in
smoke? Winter, we had no heat. The two of them would be chain smoking.
It's disgusting.
Okay,
that's how I realized
until that's 5 years. Billy and I were in this apartment for 5 years. After he moved out, I'm like, oh my God, what is going on here? I smell like shit. And it was all the smoke. I had to get everything cleaned. And then Brooks moved in 6 months later.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
There was at least a few nights when Dad was there as well.
Yes.
And he smoked too.
Oh, God. It's like a smoking room in an airport.
It is exactly like the ventilation. Exactly, where you're partitioned off, except smaller.
The whole family smoked. My mother smokes. Everyone smoked except for me. I was the only one, but I got a lot of it.
And then Brooks moved up to New York after finishing.
When the boys left, I mean, was that a moment for you? Was it like, oh shit, I'm alone now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because I basically kind of had to find, I mean, I think I was in Denton, Texas, which is outside Dallas at the time, but basically I was like, all right, I got to figure out what I want to do. And then called my dad and he was in Austin. And I said, I got to figure out what I'm going to want to do. He's like, all right. He's like, all right, what do you mean? You want to come here? And I was like, yeah. He was like, oh God. And then.
But it actually made you guys really close. And
no, we were really close. But I mean, right? Like basically I went down there within a week I had a place to live, a job and a car, and they were all awful. But yes.
But they were things.
But they were things. And then my dad and I grew close through those years. And then I went to college.
But were you always writing?
Yeah, I started writing when I was about 19 or 20.
And painting.
Yeah.
But was that something for you that was like, I want to be a writer? Or was it just...
I still hate that. I still have a hard time. I think I'm getting easier... saying I'm a writer / artist or whatever, or but back then it was very hard for me to say I'm a writer, even though I had written a lot of poetry and song lyrics, short stories, and then I wrote a script and then I wrote a play and then it kept going and it still's going, and you know, Billy and I are working on stuff and I'm still working on plays and all of that. But I think that I still do have a lot comes with saying, you know, the megaphone, I'm a writer, you know, it's like, well, like, what does that mean? You know, I'm still trying to figure that out. But yes, I think that, we all acted at certain points. I mean, Tommy did.
I gave it acting.
Well, you're on.
What? I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah. Tommy's on Sex in the City.
Yeah.
Yay, Sex in the City.
I wasn't an actor, but let me give you a quick story real fast. Oliver, to your point, though, the three of us are all very independent, but also very close. And I can't speak for these two, but I'm great on my own or I'm great with everybody. I mean, I can kind of, and so I don't know. I think Brooks had his writing and other things going on. So I don't think we miss each other because we all know we're there, even though we're not together.
That's the best kind of relationship.
Well, that's like a good family.
I hope that's Billy and Brooks' experience as well. But that's my. No.
I mean, sometimes.
Billy, you're like, that's not how I see it, Tommy. But okay.
I dabbled
a few Thanksgivings where I wish I was in a different apartment.
Okay, Billy, when did you say I'm going to be an actor? I mean, clearly forever you wanted to be on Broadway.
As soon as I could use my voice and speech in the way that you just did, I knew acting trade was mine. Is that the Al Jenner technique?
Bravo.
When I was in college, you know what I was thinking about, Brooks, actually, when you were talking about your time together with Dad, too. I did notice this about Dad. It hung over his head. It hung over his head that he had not delivered and that he felt like he had failed us and failed my mom. And, you know, he was an optimist, so he would try not to get dragged down. But you could see it come out. And when Brooks was in Austin, when he and I would talk, he took such great pride in the steadiness with which he had been a part of Brooks's life, like having lunches and stuff and helping to find, even if it was a crappy car or whatever it was. So I think not only did it do something for you, Brooks, but I think it did something enormous for Dad during that period of time.
Definitely.
Yeah. And when I was in college in North Carolina, I was a good student when I was in high school and stuff. It was hard for me to make the transition to college life. My GPA, my first semester of freshman year, I'd be surprised if it exceeded a 2.0. There were some classes that I just kind of forgot about. And there was a couple classes that I just decided to let go without telling anybody about it. And it turns out that if you get a 0, that brings your GPA down. So in any case, I started to take classes that I thought would engage me in some way. And many of them were in the communications department because I had taken this one elective my first year that was called the Oral Interpretation of Prose and Poetry by Paul Ferguson was the teacher. And
I love him.
Yeah, you loved him, TC. you would basically take a poem and find a way to perform it. Well, for whatever reason, I could spend a couple of hours the night before really working on it, diligently thinking about it, considering different performance ideas. I didn't work that hard at anything else academically. I mean, I could do the other things fine, but this was something that engaged me and I ended up doing well. And I noticed that my GPA started to skyrocket. So I was taking every performance class that I could possibly take without declaring that I was a drama major because I didn't think anybody who was helping to pay for my education would go for a degree in drama. So
the pops,
exactly. Because I was having lunch every week with my grandfather at that time, who had become a widow recent. Do you call it a widower or widower?
Widower.
My grandmother died the day I graduated high school. So as soon as I got to college, my grandfather was desperately lonely and he said, we're having lunch every week. And I was like, okay, Pops. And he was kind of a gruff, tough guy. So they weren't the most fun lunches for a while, but we did it every week for 4.5 years. So we became very, very close.
Tell him about the money.
Do you mean the change at the end of the?
Yes.
Well, we would go to this place called the Rathskeller. I don't know that it's such a stellar story, TC. You may have overproduced this one. But
I can tell it better. I can tell it better if you want me to.
But the key for me, the incentive for me was that when he paid for lunch, I would get the change, which typically would be somewhere between the $14 and $6 range, which I could actually really use each time. And then if I was dating somebody, then Pops would say, well, you got to bring her to lunch. And I started to realize that that was cutting into my proceeds. So I no longer spoke about whether or not I was dating to him. But it went on for a period of time. And he slowly would come and see my performances. And at first they were kind of avant-garde performances in the poetry and the speech communications department. And then I started to ask the acting teachers if I could take the acting classes for majors without being a major. And there were a couple of people there, Dee Dee Corvinus and Susanna Reinhart, who were really supportive. So by the time that I had finished Chapel Hill, I had taken every performance class that was there. And I didn't know what I was qualified for. And I asked them and they said, you should go to graduate school. And I thought that's what I wanted to do. I want to be a teacher. I want to go get my master's and I'll be a teacher. And it wasn't until the first day of graduate school when I was sitting in the theater with the 60 other students where I realized that I didn't want to teach. I wanted to be an actor, but I needed to be around people who were as like serious minded and focused on it being a trade and not just something to I feel like there's a lot of people who get into the theater department in high school and college who just want to stick a thumb in the nose of or in the eye of like normies. So it's people who feel disenfranchised in some way or another. But that to me wasn't a good enough reason to pursue a trade. And it wasn't really what I liked about it. It was reflecting back to our mom earlier. It was the storytelling and the community part of it that I really identified with it. And we had this woman, Zelda Fitchhandler, who was she's a formidable person in the theater, American theater community. Describe it like that during that first day. And I was like, oh shit. Yeah, that's exactly what I want to do. And that's when I feel like I became someone who was in pursuit of an acting career.
You're such a theater nerd.
I am an acting nerd. Exactly.
What was your first role on screen?
It was in Grind. Yeah. Great that job. Was with the late Adrian Shelley and, Paul Schulze and Amanda Peet. And I played Fast Eddie. And he was ex-con who liked street racing and yes. Dangerous love. So check it out.
Sounds like you now.
Do you remember when we went and had a drink? We were shooting Almost Famous and we went to the Cornet Theater and I was like, why do you torture yourself? Like, you're a movie star and all you do is just like torture yourself as like the actor. And like, you're just it's like comes so easy. You're just a star. Do you remember when I said that
of
to you?
Of course. And I remember trying to explain to you.
I was like, you need to just relax.
I'm like, listen to you. You're 20 and you are Penny Lane, okay? I am 30 and I can't really play guitar. I'm not Russell Hammond. If I don't like pressure myself, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to lose this opportunity.
Oh, my God.
I can't hold on to my mustache.
That says it all, Bill.
It's true. I was tortured. I mean, the entire time.
So tortured. But it's true. Like, acting for Billy has always been a serious job. And it's, and by the way, what you're saying is right. You know, I feel that way too, even though I have a different relationship to it. The point is to make something feel effortless. But, you know, it can be seen differently when someone's watching an effortless performance. It's not to be confused with that it's taking no effort. In fact, it's the opposite.
That's exactly. A good point. For 3 years when Billy was at Tisch, he brought it home with him. And so I was tortured for 3 years of the Alexander technique and what other shit he's picking up.
My vocal warm-ups.
He would try
them. Oh, jeez. Oh, my gosh. Billy. That's like, I mean, like...
No, I would videotape myself in different postures to try to make sure that I was aligning myself perfectly. And then, you know, Tommy would come home and expect to see something on the video. And it was really me, you know, in my underwear or in the buff. Oh. Looking at the costume. trying to understand anatomy. So because that's one of the things that we were working on in school is how can you organize your body?
No. I'm playing Nintendo on the couch, and Billy's like, look at this. Look at this move. Exactly. And he's playing his leotard. It's horrible.
Helix the mat, the wonderful, wonderful mattress. Helix the mattress. Helix I love me some Helix. I've been sleeping on my Helix now for a month since I've been back in LA. And I gotta tell you, the dreams are good. The back is good. I'm not hot at night. It's a beautiful mattress, man. It's a beautiful, beautiful mattress. You must go buy one of these. Trust me, I know we get paid to say these ads and to do these ads, but this mattress is the best mattress that I have ever slept on, hands down. I've turned my friends onto this mattress. I have my boy, Mark Rose, who actually was living at my house during this time, sleeping on my mattress while I was in Colorado. He is now ordering mattresses for his hotels. He's in the hotel business. It's that good.
That's awesome.
So Helix.
What I love about Helix is the quiz component. They make it really easy.
It's a 2-minute quiz, and it matches your body type and your sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. Okay, I did it, and boom, type, answer, and it spits out the mattress. I got the Midnight Lux, and it's perfect. I mean, it fits me perfectly. So if you like a mattress that's really soft or firm, or if you sleep on your side or your back or your stomach, you sleep hot, the Helix has a mattress for every type of sleeping and your unique tastes.
I love when companies design things for individuals and everybody sleeps differently.
The delivery, too, was really quick and easy. It was cool. It came in this box that I was like, oh, this must be the pillow. I mean, it was that small. It was the mattress. It was almost like a science experiment for the kids. I cut it open and boom, it just expanded. It was cool.
I mean, it has been awarded number one best overall mattress pick of 2019 and 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine.
Go to helixsleep.com/sibling. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz and they will match you with a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. Helix is offering up to $200 off of all mattress orders and 2 free pillows. Oh, by the way, the pillows are incredible too. For our listeners at helixsleep.com/sibling. That's Helix, H-E-L-I-X, sleep.com/sibling for up to $200.
Now, when did you guys realize how talented your brother is? Like, what was the moment when you went like,
brother never won an Oscar though.
They're not there yet, Kate.
No, come on. I'm serious because we know, you know, I mean, I remember watching Billy on stage going like, fuck man. Like he's, you have an incredible presence. Talent. So
yeah, I know. But how come you haven't won an Academy Award?
Sorry, this must be a
tortured conversation
thing, but you cut out, Ollie. I couldn't hear you.
Hello? I'll ask
them. That's probably your microphone.
How far are you along on the EGOT?
You're getting closer.
Yeah, so far I'm at.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it's funny. I knew when, because Billy asked me very nicely to see everything he did, even if he was directing the episode at Tisch. And I would go down and see this experimental shit. It was horrible, but Billy always stood out. But I started knowing the end of his second year and then his third year, agents were starting to come after the show to stand outside and talk to him. And he's still with Simon Halls after all these years. And that was 1995.
95, yeah, with Arcadia, yeah.
And so I started meeting these people, and they were interested in him. And I'm like, wow, I mean, he's really talented.
Like, was there a moment when you saw him, whether it was on film or on stage? I mean, other than standing out, where?
Arcadia.
Well, for me, Arcadia definitely too. But with you flew me out when you were filming Without Limits, and to see him transform into Steve Prefontaine and then do research on The Runner, look at the actual coaches and teachers that were watching him replicate not only the performance of the race, but the cadence, the basically divining Steve. And I watched so many scenes and I watched them watch him. And I was like, this is, Yeah, he's definitely
that movie. Yeah,
he's tapping into something, or seeing, like seeing the engine start to turn, and seeing how, and also to your point, to where, you don't realize, because it does seem effortless, and a lot of your scenes, in Almost Famous, to where it's like, oh, that just seems, you know, effortless. It's like it's not.
Well, Kate will know for sure, because the two of us, I'm sure, were arguing about it before. She was like, Billy, would you please just do it? And I'd be like, no, because Cameron, I don't understand the that you have.
Oh my god. Jesus,
like in the trajectory. I mean, the both of them.
We're just
crazy.
Going to the ice room.
That was, oh my god, the ice room scene. That was like, we talked about that for hours. And the truth is, at that time, Cameron, he could buy that much time, and Cameron was interested in nuance and stuff. And like, he really championed whoever, like whatever kind of actor you were, he championed it. He tried to find a way into your style of working so that he could be a part of that collaboration.
Yeah.
And like every nuance, I felt that. And
well, and
me,
I would never deliver, like I would do stuff too, which is so funny, because the kind of actor you are, like, there was a time when it was coverage on Billy, right? And we were shooting the scene where I say, you know, how old are you? How old are we really? And then Billy comes up and we shake hands. But the coverage was first on him, and Cameron played a song, as he did while we're shooting. Billy comes over and he goes, oh, Penny Lane, you know, and he puts his hand out. And Cameron put a song on, and the camera's not even on me, and I'm bawling. And I'm like, I'm sorry. And I'm just bawling my eyes out. And Billy's like looking at me like, what is happening?
And you just let it, like, you let the spirit move through you. And Cameron, you know,
and it,
I was cerebral about it.
Yeah. But it was amazing.
Yeah. You got out of your head, though. You got out of your head and Eat, Pray, Love.
but you know, by the way, Ali, that just shows the depth of your devotion to me, that you have gone that peak.
Oliver went through all your favorite episodes of all your movies.
But he was just Googling while you were watching golf, Tommy. He was Googling
like that in real life. If he orders a toaster, he reads the manual back and forth. I just plug it in and hope it works. Yeah. Billy's like, I can troubleshoot. I can fix it. So in real life, it's like he's doing the acting thing. And so he wants to know all the knowledge. I'm like, just plug it in, see if it works.
Mm-hmm. But then what Tommy does when it doesn't work is he throws it out the window and it hits somebody on the head. When I come in and I could say, listen, man, all you needed to do was take the plastic safety guard off
My window's not big enough to get out, so.
Tommy, when Billy is on the Rachel Ray show, do you just go with the normal, he's a guest, or do you tell Rachel things to like throw Billy off center?
I don't really get involved in that. I'm usually out there to take a picture with Rachel and my mother and Billy. But one year, and by the way, Billy's been coming on since Rosie O'Donnell. So he's been on.
Explain what that means, TC, since you were working at Rosie.
I was a booker at Rosie after I left MGM. And I would book Billy, and then he'd be like, you have to go out there with him. So I'd have to go sit out there. And one time I was plugging a short film that I did, which this is why my acting career didn't take off. But before that short film started, I went to Billy and I said, hey, man, you know, I'm doing this short film. I'm the lead. It's $1 million. They're shooting in Technicolor. Any advice? He goes, no. I go, what? He goes, you didn't study.
I was like, hey, motherfucker, I'm $80,000 in debt from 3 years of graduate school. Goes, you think you're just going to hop on the bandwagon and do some basic?
You're taking jobs away from real actors.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and take some classes?
Okay? Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel.
But so one time at Rachel, Billy was promoting, Watchmen, the movie Watchmen.
Oh, God.
And so my friend Shane, who was one of the producers on the show, decided to dress me up as the Watchman.
As Dr. Manhattan, TC, as Dr. Manhattan.
Dr. Manhattan, which is a blue guy. And he's ripped and he looks good. I'm not ripped. They had to paint in stomach things for me. And
it's so called abs.
Fake abs. So we were an hour late.
Stomach thing.
I was being painted. And Billy told the producer, I need to leave now because I have a radio interview downtown.
No. They kept us waiting. I got Patrick and Jeffrey D. Morgan to come on the show with me, and they kept us waiting. And they kept saying, oh, sorry, it's just going to be another 5 minutes. And it was like 40 minutes. And at which point I turned to Simon. I was like, whoever was with me at the time. And I said, I can't keep these guys waiting any longer. I don't know what Rachel is doing. It wasn't Rachel. They were painting Tommy. They were painting Tommy blue.
Oh, my God.
And giving him just so he could come out for this one bit. So
they snuck me out there, and Billy's face, both Patrick Wilson and Jeffrey Dean, were both crying laughing. Billy is white as a ghost.
I was mortified for the entire crewed up lineage.
After that show aired, I didn't date for 6 months because no one really knew my boobs or my fake ass.
It was pretty bad.
Oh my God. Oh my so God.
He had ripped stomach things.
And by the way, Billy, you can start to come on. I booked the three of you. Thank you.
One word to describe each of your brothers.
Tommy.
Oh, me. Oh, sorry. A diligent for Billy and thoughtful for Brooks.
Billy.
That's good. For Tommy, loyal. And Brooks, thoughtful is a good one.
Tommy, I'd say thoughtful for you because the cards. Billy, introspective. In a good way. No, I mean,
I accept that.
But also that caring.
That was a zing.
Introspective yet caring.
Yeah. Tommy, jackass. Brooks,
first. Celebrity crush.
Tommy?
Cela Ward.
Oh, interesting.
He was shooting a movie in New York, and I walked by her trailer, and I'm like, oh, my
in
God.
In your life?
Pretty much. I mean, maybe Cinderella. I don't know.
Billy? Wow.
What about you? Because I'm spacing on her name, and I feel terrible about it.
Heather Locklear, Bill. No?
No, it was in Karate Kid.
Elizabeth Shue.
Oh, yeah, I loved Elizabeth.
Yes. Yeah. Adventures of Babysitting.
Adventures of Babysitting. Favorite movie. Yeah.
You have to be Rebecca De Mornay.
Risky Business.
That's right.
In Risky Business, Rebecca De Mornay was.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Actually, and that was Tommy and I had an experience one time. And this must have been just after Almost Famous because I had never been recognized. Nobody ever gave me, asked me questions about acting or whatever. We happened to be playing golf shortly after Almost Famous. And the guy who was our caddy, he kept asking me questions. He was like really obsessed with the fact that I was an actor and that he had seen something I was in. And to the point, and if you play golf, you know that it's like a 4 to 6 hour round that you're spending the time. It got to about the 16th or 17th hole, and I come out of a sand trap, and all Tommy and my friend see is me yell, no, I don't know Rebecca De Mornay.
Did she mention me?
No, she didn't mention you because I don't know her, Brooks. Okay, how many times did I tell you? I don't know her. I would have hooked up with her.
Billy, that brings me to also like how many times are you in a store and like Tiny Dancer comes on and just people sort of like look at you? Like that
I'm sure you get it more than I do.
The best story about this is Billy and I were in New Jersey at an MMA fight and it's all huge guys, tattoos. We take a train back to the city. Billy's got his hat down. Somebody recognized him on the train, and they serenade us with that Tiny Dancer.
No,
he had to tip his
hat. That's amazing. Yeah, I never had that experience. Okay, which brother has like the weirdest habits?
Tommy. No, Brooks.
I feel like it should be Tommy.
Brooks, yeah, definitely Brooks.
Give me one.
Hey, just look at the headset.
You got to start with the got to start with the mustache.
I'm so glad you brought up the headset. I'm very glad. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to say anything.
That's his wife's headset.
No, it's my kids have been yelling the whole time. If I hadn't had this on, I could not hear anything.
Okay, you guys.
He wears it all day long, whether he's connected.
Oh, yeah, I do. That's a habit. I just want.
You guys, I can't hear you.
Okay, guys, you guys are going to rob a bank, all right?
Okay.
Who's driving the getaway car?
Me.
Okay. Who's planning the heist?
What's the third option?
Well, who's going to actually do it? I think I already know this.
No, I mean, then who runs?
I mean, Tommy's producing
saying, put
the
fucking hands up.
Yeah, that's Billy. He's the actor. Billy. He's got to like he's right.
Oh, well, I run in and say, not in the face, on the ground.
I think we would plan it as a group and then divvy up the what we had to do.
Yeah, I don't know if Brooks, if I would leave you in charge of the planning, because you might come up with something too ornate for Tommy to follow.
I'm also a better driver than Brooks.
This sounds like an awful bank heist. We knew we'd never get out of the planning stages.
No.
We're like, no, you're going in. No, you're going in. Hey, Brooks, the coffee.
This is your next script for Billy.
It's not bad.
How about this one? If all three of you got put into the octagon, who would come out on top?
Billy.
Ooh, that's a tough call. I don't know. Brooks is wily. Brooks can start throwing elbows everywhere.
Maybe nobody.
Billy is very strong.
Exactly. Nobody's coming out alive.
Who's the best athlete?
Oh.
Best athlete? I was in high school, but it's been a long while. Billy's an amazing golfer. Brooks is an amazing skater. I think we all have different qualities in sports.
Are you guys all athletic?
I mean, to some degree, I feel like, you know, none of us were. I mean, Tommy was the catcher of his high school baseball team. And so
I was a four-year letterman in baseball. So, and I went to play in college and it didn't work out.
I wrestled when I was in high school, but the year that didn't wrestle, we won state, which gives you some idea of how what kind of asset I was to the high school wrestling team.
Okay, you need advice, relationship advice. What brother do you go to?
I find new siblings.
Okay, so let's end with our question that we always ask.
Okay, one last one. What's the movie that Billy has done that you least like?
Oliver, you're such a dick.
He's such a dick.
This is such an Oliver question.
I know.
This is the kind of question he would ask me on the 17th hole when I'm over a 6-foot putt that I gotta make to win.
I've loved them all, Oliver. I've loved them all.
Oh,
all of them.
See.
Okay.
I'll give you the worst one. The worst one was, I think, Oedipus, Bill, on Broadway, off Broadway.
That was off Broadway. That was
like 8 hours long. Eight hours.
It was Frances McDormand and I, and it was only four.
And it was horrible.
Did I go see that one?
I couldn't drag you to that one. I've dragged you to some other ones, but I couldn't get you to that one.
I just want to say one thing before we do the last question. Billy, you're so handsome. And like, I wish that I had your career and you were always the most handsome guy of all time. I was like, that guy's so fucking handsome. And I felt like we could be brothers. And it never worked out. But I'm glad that we can have this conversation and maybe we can be friends again. And you're just so handsome, you know?
Ollie, I'm sorry. There was a little bit of a technical thing. If you could just do that one more time.
Okay, you're so from handsome. You're just handsome.
I'm sweating now.
It's hot in here.
It is hot.
So the last question that we ask everybody, now this is a three-parter, right? So, well, it's a two-part question, but you guys got to do it for each other. So if you could take one thing from your brother
for yourself, something that you wish that you had, a quality, a trait, what would that be? And on the flip side of that, if you could alleviate something from him that would make his life a little bit easier, what would you alleviate?
Ooh. My first thing is I would take brains from both Billy and Brooks, because they're both much smarter than me. And then I would alleviate angst with both of them. I mean, I think we all have our inner angst, and mine shows differently. But Billy and Brooks are such good fathers and such good spouses that I would want to take that away just so they could just live and not worry about it.
That's good brotherly advice. Appreciate that, TC. Love you.
Love you, bro.
I would take Tommy's care for others. The people in his life, that the way that he cares for them is, it's unique. And I would take away from him the cost of that care for others that it has on him. From Brooks, his creativity and sense of humor is singular to me, and it just has flipping killed me forever. The two of us sometimes we will have conversations where not a single word is said, and we're both belly laughing for 20 minutes. So that if I could take that ability to really enjoy a laugh together from him, that would be one thing. And I think, like Tommy, if I could alleviate or take something away from him, it would be any doubt or self-consciousness about what an incredible person and father is.
Thanks, brother.
I love that.
That's Tommy and Billy, I think both I would take. I'm getting better, but I think the level of perseverance and dedication, focus, I guess. And for Tommy, I guess both I would take away or give maybe the ability to be able to also unplug and like have a real vacation to where there is no pressure and relax. Yeah, at some point.
Thanks, Brooks.
Yeah,
appreciate it, bro.
I love you guys. Great. I'm so happy you came and did this. I hope you enjoyed it.
I'm glad all three of you came on too. I'm glad that last minute choice was made.
I didn't want.
No, it was good, man.
Thanks so much for having us, even though Tommy didn't want me.
I voted no. guys, thank you for having
us. The feeling's mutual. I love you guys. And Ollie, I can't wait to start up our bromance again.
I'm texting you.
I can't wait.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you, boys.
Bye.
Bye.
Sibling Revelry is executive produced by Kate Hudson and Oliver Hudson.
Producer is Allison Bresnik. Music by Mark Hudson, a.k.a. Uncle Mark.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.